It's not really Spanish. You're listening to the world's famous Afro Spanish. Yo, welcome. Welcome to the Educated Guest Podcast. It's me and your boy, Mr. Underscore A-Y-Y-Y.
What's good? What's good?
We call this episode 30, and we are pleased to bring you a hot episode. We've been waiting a long time for this, right, my mans?
Man, since last year, we've been trying to get Mike Strong onto the podcast. Finally, the stars aligned. Schedule is freed up. My mans is ready, and he brings fire.
Tell the folks a little bit about him. You want to read the bio? Read it in 30 seconds or less.
No, I'm not going to read the bio, but Hopeville, USA's finest. Graduate of Hopeville High School, Portland and Nazarene graduate, music major, switched over to literature, became a teacher at High Tech High at a young age. Your man's was doing it. And so now he's doing some work at High Tech High, doing some training with the Stanford D School, doing big things, man. So I'm excited for everybody to hear this.
We like him here at the podcast because he believes in flipping the script, turning education up on its ear, rethinking what we do, our systems, everything down to the little nitty gritty. Start small. There's just some really big lessons here in some really simple words.
My man just does it. And I think that's what's the beauty of Mike is that super brilliant, but he makes the complex simple and makes it digestible for both principals and students and teachers and everyone in between. Dude's a master.
Okay, so we start this episode with one simple question because we like to have fun.
What are you drinking?
The one with the deer. You sounded extra rugged right there when you said that. I can't believe we finally got Mike Strong on. Now, you don't know this, but I affectionately call you Stranger. I don't even know you, bro.
Oh, shit.
All right, welcome to the Educated Guest Podcast. Bro, you're the one guest that I actually just want you to introduce yourself because I don't know how to introduce you after saying your name.
Yeah, my name is Mike Strong. I'm a teacher at High Tech High. Mm-hmm. I've been at High Tech High since 2004. Mm-hmm. I grew up in Imperial Valley in Hopeville, California, the most southeastern city of our great state.
Whoop.
Yeah. And I also do a little bit of other stuff on the side. I like to play music. I do some work for the Stanford D School with School Retool, coaching some principals around the country.
Okay.
And then every once in a while, I get to go other places and talk to some cool people about good stuff.
Man, we're going to get into that. I want to hear about the D School. I'm very aroused.
Slightly aroused. Medium chub, for sure.
Right? I get to slowly grind and work with principals.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about that later.
Cool.
Let's start, as we usually start, at the beginning. And Mike, tell us a little bit about your origin story, man. Like, what got you into education? What inspired you? What was that all like?
Yeah, I grew up in a tiny little town. A lot of agriculture, a lot of farm laborers, and I didn't come from a place where there was like a lot of expectation that you finish school, not at all, that you go to college and stuff. But I had a really amazing family. And I get the question a lot, like, what are you? My family comes from all over the place.
You're from the Imperial Valley, so naturally people would assume you're Latino, but you're not, are you?
I am. I am Latino, yeah. A word. I'm
psych.
My family came from Monterrey. My family came from Chihuahua. My family came from Harlan County, Kentucky, in coal mining country. My family came from Punjab, India.
Okay.
Oh,
and
wow.
So you get all of this.
Yeah.
But something that was really important, I think, as a kid was just, you know, we were people who did stuff. You know, when you needed something, you worked it out. You made it happen.
Mm-hmm.
When you need something to be done, you figured out a way to do it, or you trusted somebody in the family to do it. And, I had these two sides. On my mom's side, I'm the first in the family to go to college and do that whole thing. Mm-hmm. On my dad's side, my grandfather was from poor coal mining town, and went to World War II, and he came home, and he was like, "Man, stuff's really messed up." To oversimplify it, I think we need to learn how to do better. And he got obsessed with education, ended up getting 6 or 7 master's degrees. His kids all went to college. Very quote unquote educated. I think that's a weird word to use, to like separate people a little bit. But one side of the family, there was no doubt you're going to go to school. You're going to do the stuff. Other side of the family, you know, you're going to stay on the little tiny farm, and you know, the family stays together. And so, I don't know. I went away to school. I was really lucky, and I worked really hard, and I got to go to school. I played sports and stuff, and I got to go to college to do that, which was great. And I started falling in love with storytelling. I started falling in love with the great conversation that's going on in the world through literature, music, all this other stuff. And decided, like, I think I want to share that with young people.
So are there any educators from your formative years that stick out, like people that inspired you as a young learner?
Yeah. You know, I think at a really young age in like elementary school, there were teachers who in a place where I grew up, where you have high migrant populations, new people all the time, families moving in and out, interesting like minority and majority situations because it's predominantly Latino people out there. I was really proud. I had a teacher in fourth grade, Mrs. Ponton, and she was the kindest person that I've ever met. And just meeting students who are coming into fourth grade who have never been in this country before, or who have been in this country but never been to school before, and being just as warm and welcoming to those kids as others who, you know, were the top students, you might say, in the class, students who were really good at the worksheets and the tests and the quizzes. And I think later in life, just teachers who had the magic of, I'm going to push you really hard, and I'm going to love you to death too. And I had basketball coach in high school. I played basketball. Mr. Goodsell, he's the mayor of my hometown right now, actually.
No way.
The mayor. But just, you know, that holding you to a high expectation while also, you know, you cry on my shoulder. Let's talk about life. Let's deal with some things, was great. And then, you know, I had great parents too. And my dad was a teacher of mine. He taught me eighth grade language arts. And my mom was a doer of all things, who kind of taught me like the importance of like looking at humanity in all things we do. And I had like one of my most profound memories of being a kid was my mom, the car was filled with like stuff. Like there was a Christmas tree and all these presents and stuff around Christmas time one year, and none of it was for us. And I was young. I didn't really understand it, but she was like giving Christmas to this like little family in town that was like having a hard time. Wow. So, you know, living this life of like, yeah, we do the education thing, but we also just like love on people.
We live it.
Yeah, I wrote this poem one time called "A Different Kind of Prince," and it was about like growing up and realizing a little bit later in life, like just as you kind of starting to be a grown up, that like I think I was royalty, but it was like a different kind of royalty. Ooh. You know, it was royalty that like hires immigration attorneys for the family next door.
That it was serves,
you know,
that the royalty kind of, that
yeah,
serves.
Yeah.
That's what's up.
That's fucking up. Rad, dude. So you mentioned something about going to college on athletics. Would you end up going? Where did you end up going, and what did you end up
doing? Yeah.
Because it doesn't look like you were a football player.
I wasn't that good. No, I was, you know, I thought I was going to be in the World Cup at one point, and then I thought I was going to be in the NBA at one point.
Yeah.
And then I turned 9. in high school, I got into running cross country and track, and I found like a purity in it. I worked really, really hard at it, and got good enough that, you know, toward the end of high school, I started getting these envelopes in the mail and stuff. And it was great. I was probably going to go to like a community college and then transfer kind of deal. And then all of a sudden, you know, actually I had an appointment, and I was thinking about going to West Point. And I was actually kind of close to doing that. Which 9/11 was my freshman year of college. So that would have been a wild life.
Yes, very different life.
Yeah. So now I went and ran in circles for a paycheck. I
now, guess. Real quick though, what'd you run that mile in? Like your best?
I was a decent. Oh man, I was a pretty decent miler. You know, in high school, I ran a 4:24, which is not that great. I was more of an 800-meter runner.
Okay.
Yeah. And in college, we run 1500, but it translates to right around a 4:14, something like that.
All right, because we got some really good runners at the high school that I teach at. So you know, we had the best sophomore in the county last year. His name's Justin Mulvaney. And so one time I go in there and I'm a chubby guy. You guys don't know me on the podcast. You can't see me on the podcast. I'm kind of rotund at this time. I finished that mile in 14 minutes, and Justin just looked at me and he goes, "You were walking.
You're a piece of shit."
What's the kid's name? Who's that kid?
Yeah. What's the kid's name? I said it. It's Justin Mulvaney. And last year he was.
Oh, I know Mulvaney.
You know Mulvaney? Yeah, he kicks ass. Anywho's. So you went for the cross country. And our last interview, Dr. Dan Garcia, was also a big cross country guy.
Yeah, we were commenting how. You know, the cross country guys are not the typical, I don't think I'm not going to make grades guy. Like every single cross country guy that we've ever come across with has been either a valedictorian candidate or
teacher. If you don't round up my 23.6 to a B minus, I'm not going to be eligible for cross country.
I think it's pretty hard to like go outside and run like 8, 9, 10, 12 miles every day and then be like a bad kid or something.
Yeah.
It's pretty tough. You got to really want to like fall apart there.
And so, you know, it's cool.
I almost did it. Like I did a pretty good job of, breaking that mold.
Watching him coach too, because, you know, Mike and I worked together over at High Tech Middle Media Arts for about 3 or 4 years. Some of the best experiences I've ever had working somewhere, quote unquote working. but like you see him coaching the high school track team and it's so like, all right, this is what you got to do. And all the kids are all like, they all fought. Like they're just, all right, Mike, what is it? And he'll just say whatever the cadence is or whatever mm-hmm. the drill is. And mm-hmm. all right, cool. And all 20 of them just fucking go run their asses off. Mm. it's pretty impressive. Like I'm like, dang, dude, you gotta like that. Yeah, they're running with post-its today. I'm like, what do you mean they're running with post-its? They're gonna run with a post-it and they're gonna run as far as they can on this route,
mm-hmm.
and then they're gonna put the post-it down. Okay. And tomorrow, they're gonna beat it. And I was like, oh shit, that's legit. I fucks with it. I was like, dang, dude, you really doing that? So yeah, man, yeah.
So you went to college. Did you know you were gonna be an educator? Was that the plan?
Not necessarily. I went to college. I was initially I was a music major, actually.
Dope.
I was a trumpet player. I was in a punk band, and then I was also a trumpet player.
Nice.
And
nice.
It's kind of funny. And I was decent at the trumpet too. So my first year of college, I was a music major at performance trumpet. Pretty random. I realized pretty quickly, like, I don't think I'm gonna have a livelihood here. You know, like,
let's go into education.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if my family had been like, you know, musicians, had money,
yeah,
or something, like, then you get to be an artist, right? If your family's rich, you get to be an artist. And so I switched partly because I loved literature. I loved poetry. I like songwriting so much,
mm-hmm.
and so I turned over into being a literature major and just like studying. What one of my advisors when I was in college called the Great Conversation, right? Oh. All those books in those libraries are talking to each other. Like, do you want to be a part of the game?
Ooh. Yeah. Tell me more.
And so I got into that and really quickly I was like, you know, it'd be pretty sweet to just like talk about this stuff all day.
Mm-hmm.
Like I could do that. I could spit some Steinbeck all day, every day.
So you start school, you start working in education, and how do you end up at High Tech High?
I was at college and I was working in a writer's studio on campus. We had a really cool thing I went to Point Loma Nazarene called the Writer's Studio. And it was this model where like English majors that might be like underclassmen or even undergraduates would work with students across the campus on their writing assignments.
Mm.
Even like MBA students and others would be coming down there. Even sometimes professors who are working on like pieces that they're trying to publish,
mm-hmm.
could come there. And so you had this like super integrated little world. Mm-hmm. And High Tech High was interested in that. And so they came by and visited and checked it out. And they were like, yeah, this is really cool what you're doing here. And I was kind of helping organize like the workshops that were being put on and scheduling people and stuff.
Yeah.
And they're like, can we ask you how much you are making at this job? And I was like, well, I'll tell you what, I am one of the highest paid employees on campus. I am making, you know, $6.70 or whatever it was. Like, you know, it was a lot at the time. Uh-huh. And they were like, you, how would you like to have a job at a school? And I was like, really? Yes. And
so sold.
Sold. So I often tell people who come visit High Tech High that like I was born in the back room. Like, how long have you been here? And I was like, I was conceived here pretty much. Like, sometimes I feel like, man, I don't really have any like knowledge of anything else, man. Like my know-how is limited, I guess.
Okay.
But you know, it's there's something to be said about, you know, being in one of the most progressive, education's most progressive school. And it's not a model, right? And it's not like, no, there's people often trying to imitate it, but I don't think you can really duplicate it. It's a trip, but we'll get into that in a little bit, because you know, your man's is also a movie star, but we'll get into that in
Stop
a little bit.
It.
He is. you think I'm fucking joking. Okay, ready? Mike, were you or were you not in a movie?
Yeah, I was in a movie.
we were at a conference, and my man's like, I just don't want to get noticed right now. I just want to sit.
Oh,
nigga.
Stop it.
He's being a lush. Tell him about the movie, Mike. What movie were you in, and why were you in that movie?
Yeah. So there's a pretty well-made documentary that came out about sort of the state of education these days.
Okay.
And some ideas of where we might need to go.
Okay.
Called Most Likely to Succeed. And so it debuted a couple years ago at Sundance.
Uh-huh.
I was super lucky. They invited me out there because they were filming quite a bit of High Tech High, and mm-hmm. and my classroom and the projects that I was were working on were featured in the film. And Greg, the director, Greg Whiteley, he'd be an awesome guy for you guys to have on too. Just some really profound thoughts, having been able to like tour the country and see a whole bunch of different things that people are trying.
Okay.
And I think that's what the film really celebrates, is like, we just have to try things.
Yeah.
Like we have to have sort of the liberty here. We have to liberate ourselves to make attempts. And that's what High Tech High is. High Tech High is an attempt, to try and double and triple and quadruple down on a really great idea, mm-hmm. and see where it takes us. And, it's not the answer, but it might be one of the answers or possible answer for some people.
Mm-hmm.
So the film does a really good job, I think, of just showing like what happens when a school tries to be really, really teacher driven, student centered, supported by admin, to do work that is really purposefully integrated. Like, that's our big thing. Like, there's these multiple integrations, you know, you integrate the content, you integrate people groups, and then you integrate your hands and your mind together to make something that is a synthesis, to make something that's never been there before. And people, you know, look at it. There's a line in the film where our CEO, Larry Rosenstock, says like, you know, they make something that's never been there before. Mm-hmm. And people look at it and they say, how'd they do that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. and that's a very transformative thing for the students, the teachers, for everybody.
Everybody involved, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
What's so like when I'm sure you guys hear it. I'm sure you guys hear it all the time. Like there's a bunch of criticisms that go about High Tech High and whatever. Because you guys get celebrated.
Really?
You guys also get some backlash for being a charter school or whatever. What might people be missing if they're criticizing High Tech High? What would be like something that the layman or the layperson wouldn't understand, but you guys do really well?
I think the charter school thing is an oversimplification. Like, I think there are a lot of really bad charter schools out there. Mm. You know, I think that I think there is. There was a sort of epidemic kind of problem of, you know, people opening charter schools because it's very profitable in the short, you know, you could open schools, there's money there. And
ADAs
then we had that problem in the South in some places. We had that problem in DC. There was a big article released recently about grade inflating by some charter schools. And then looks like they're going to close their doors. right? So flash pan success, monetary like prize, and then go. You know, I think that Haitakai is kind of a grandfather now. Like we're kind of an OG of sorts in this, like this world, this game. And I think that some of those concerns, like there's some misunderstandings. I think the first one, something we kind of spoke about a little bit, it's like we are not a comprehensive high school.
Yeah.
You know, like it was never meant to be that. Like I said, it's meant to be an attempt, a try. There's some things that have absolutely worked. You know, I don't want to get into all the data and scores and all that kind of stuff, but there's some things that like are telling us that it works. You know, our students are like going forth into life, including college and stuff, but going forth into life, and they're like, I really like them.
Yeah.
You know, they're becoming really great people now. you know, and I think that it's just not a school for everybody, and that's okay. You know, if people want a school that is all about test prep, if they want a school that's all about a scope and a sequence and following, that exists. There are a lot of schools where you can get that kind of thing. We are not that place.
Okay.
Nice.
Yeah.
No, I appreciate that. I think that's a really honest description of the place that you work at. I'm still kind of confused. Are you a teacher there? Are you I don't know, man. Are you a dreamer there?
Like, what's your role? Yeah. What's your role?
What are the different roles?
I'm a teacher.
Okay.
I'm a teacher. I have done some other things as well for the organization. Recently I've been on a bit of a, you said dreamer. That might be a good word.
That was pretty accurate.
This year I kind of had the role. Yeah. My role this year was really about sort of supporting the school in a sort of Renaissance capacity. Mm-hmm. On the down low, we were kind of calling it the Renaissance Project a few times. You know, like any organization, the toughest thing to do is scale.
Yeah.
You know, and so Haitakai has had a pretty rapid scale. Mm-hmm. And there have been growing pains. There have been some failures. There have been some wonderful successes. But we are at a point where our founders are not getting younger.
Okay.
One of our founders retired a couple of years ago. My mentor, a guy named Rob Reardon, one of the most beautiful human beings I've ever met.
Second that.
Yeah.
The emperor.
And so, you know, it's hard to, you know, to remember the dream that was Rome sometimes when you get bigger and bigger and bigger. And, so this year I had a little bit of a role of like, how do we make sure that we are still badass? Like, how do we make sure that it's rigorous and it's loving and it's not just what it was, but that we are continuing to progress as a progressive school.
Okay. Okay.
Nice.
So I've been out of the classroom this year for the most part. I've been mentoring some teachers. I've been doing a lot with like kind of the school leader level, with professional development for us. And then I've also just had some release because I've been doing some other stuff. So sometimes I get sent out by Haitakai to speak at some things, to share kind of about us to other groups. And then I also do that work for the D school.
For Stanford. So in your capacity, so just to give you also some context, it's not like he's not teaching, because you're doing a semester long project right now called Semester Upstream, right? Want to give us a little bit of the context of that, because it's actually an experiment that you guys are doing too, right?
Yeah, so that's like one of the outcomes, or one of the little kind of tests that we decided on. I got let out of the classroom, and I decided that the best thing I could do was experiment by getting back into the classroom with students again. Mm-hmm. So a teaching partner and I, this guy Brian Delgado, one of my good friends, we have a experimental course with 9th through 12th graders. And growing up in Imperial Valley, there's this really horrible problem happening with the Salton Sea. It's the largest lake in California is out there. And it's filled by ag runoff. And the Colorado River feeds all the agriculture. And the Colorado River is slowly drying up, just all used up. And so the wind is blowing like chemical-filled dust up in the air. And it's a mess. And so I've been worrying about this for years and following it closely. And so we're doing a project right now all semester with big group of like 25 kids. And we are studying the entire watershed of the Colorado River. So we had kids all the way up to Utah on the Green River through the Grand Canyon, all along, talking to every stakeholder, private people, farmers, rangers, fishery people, politicians. We just got back from Sacramento last night. We were meeting with Senator Ben Hueso and Assemblyman Eduardo Garcia, who are reps for the area, and the governor's office and the water control board people. And it's awesome, man. It's like the kids asking these hardcore questions of these politicians, digging
with cameras on, with the cameras on,
with cameras on, yeah, with cameras on to make this film. And it's kind of surprising, man. Like, you know, I think if like Nat Geo was in the room, these dudes wouldn't say the stuff they were saying with like high schoolers, and they don't know that these are some kids who are gonna like make it as loud as they can.
Yeah.
So we'll have some interesting sound bites that are gonna get
released on social media.
Wait a minute.
I don't want to throw cold water on this, but the A through G guy is gonna ask, what kind of credit are the kids getting for doing this work?
Yeah. So that's one thing I had to kind of, like, every kid gets full A through G. Those are our graduation requirements. So I hold a variety of credentials, and so does my teaching partner I have on this. I teach humanities, which is a mix of English and history. So I have a language arts credential. I have a social studies credential, social science credential, and I have an art, visual performing arts credential. And then my teaching partner has all the science credentials and a math credential.
Dope.
So in their full day with us, they get every course they would need. Yeah.
That's dope.
And it's the
Swiss Army teaching.
And it's the, I mean, because
the Leatherman tool of teaching.
When we were when Brian and I were talking about it, man, it's just the differentiation is what scares teachers, right? And it's the differentiation that kind of intimidates teachers, because you don't know, you know, what's going to happen, what's going to go there. And he was just like, it's awesome. You just find the thing that runs through everything and you just go with it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You know, my dad was a teacher, and one of our last conversations, my dad passed away a few years ago. One of our best last conversations, I was asking him for advice, and I was like, you know, he had to retire from teaching when he got sick. And he was like, you know, it's just, you're just going for a walk with a kid, and you're going for a walk with a kid, and eventually you come back as equals, and eventually you come back and they might've passed you up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. And so that's like, it's beautiful and painful and difficult, right? But above all else, it's dynamic. And I think that the dynamic educator is sometimes an endangered species in our industry, right?
Tell
like the dude who can
more.
The dude who I'm the dude who can walk aroused. Into a room. Well, and Rodrigo, you and I talked about this years ago.
Yeah,
you know, it's the person who can walk into a room, and it doesn't matter what it is. Right. It doesn't matter what it is. It's like, I see you. I'm here. Here we go.
Yeah.
Right. Like, yeah. I could talk to you about anything. And sometimes it's just me saying, like, tell me about that, and hearing you talk about it.
Mm. Right.
Right. And yeah.
It's, you know, it's funny because we've, again, like Mike and I have known each other for a long time. So a lot of these conversations we've had ad nauseum, you know, and it's, I am not, you know, I will not back down on this, but Mike is probably one of the, if not the smartest person I know. And he's just one of the just best educators of any sort. No, for real. Like working with seventh graders and getting kids to do things that they wouldn't be able to do.
Yeah.
But then also turning around and working with principals and getting them to do what they never thought they could do. You know, just being able to craft a question or craft an experience for people. The man is just beyond equal, really.
I told you,
yeah, man.
Creamy
you, mano.
In his vocal.
I'm telling you. It's really you don't see it. You don't see it often. You don't see it often. But when you see it,
you good
go
over
take
there?
A cold shower.
I know, man. I just started
sweating.
I'm glowing.
Schwitzing.
I'm glowing.
Yeah, you
look
are.
Look at that. That's that cocoa butter.
It's the third time you sweated today.
No. You're taking us to some really dope places, and I already got some questions lined up for you.
I don't know
if you feel like taking a break or if you're good for now.
Do you need to take a break real quick, Mike?
I'm good, man.
You're good? All right.
Yeah.
You need to change?
Hold on. Let me go change my bra real quick.
Change my shorts. I'll
be right back.
Hey, yo, I heard you open something up over there. Who's the unofficial sponsor on your end, sir?
Yeah, who's the unofficial sponsor on your end, Mike?
On my end?
Yeah, who's the unofficial sponsor?
My unofficial sponsor is Cazadores.
Cazadores Tequila.
The one with the deer.
Yeah, the one with the deer.
And on our end?
On our end, we have, what is this? Corlejo. Reposado.
Reposado.
Corlejo. Okay. There's a gift.
How many R's at the front there?
Yeah, there's three or eight. Three R's. I don't know. I can't tell you.
He rolled it really, really hard.
Reposado.
So the one thing I do want to ask you is, how do you guys infuse student input over there at High Tech Eye on a systemic level?
Almost above all else, you know, adults in the building are charged. Rob Reardon, again, one of my mentors, says that our job is to be the one who notices.
Ooh.
Be the one who notices.
Okay.
The good, the bad, the ugly, all of it.
Yeah.
Be the one who notices.
Yeah.
And I think that sort of ear to the ground, you know, finger up in the breeze, kind of like dynamic nature again of being in the building, helps a lot, because students always let you know how they feel.
Okay.
Like, they will express it, sometimes directly, sometimes through behaviors, sometimes through their own organization of things. We have some strong entities at High Tech High. We have an ASB that's humongous. Mm-hmm. We have a student senate that's involved in like staff meetings.
Okay.
A lot of staff decisions.
Really?
And it's not taken very lightly. It's like, one really amazing example was the walkout that we had. We had the walkout against gun violence in schools.
Yeah. Yep.
It was the most beautifully organized student-led event I've ever seen.
Nice.
They had several meetings with the staff. We have a 1 mile walking field trip form that every student has on file. And so they planned this like path that would be right within 1 mile so that the school didn't lose ADA. And those teachers didn't ask that. Like, the students just were very thoughtful about the whole thing. Mm-hmm. And it was huge. Like, they had police blocking things, escorts. They were like police walking along with them, talking with students, which was really cool.
Mm-hmm.
They collected signs to make like a mural of their signs afterward. It was just very like well planned out and very impactful.
Thoughtful.
I thought, yeah, it was really well done. And I think like we try really hard to let them know and then to help them grow in being equals or more to us.
Okay.
And that's, I think, dope. that happens in official ways, like I was just saying, and then it happens in other ways. Like, we all have an advisory. Things are going on. We ask questions of our advisories. Like, they have input on things. When we try something new as a school, we'll like debrief with those smaller groups. Uh-huh. And like collect some of the story and share it with staff. Yeah.
See, and I was talking to Brian about that a little bit today. We were talking about that when we were in the office, and he was just talking about, you know, students being able to come up to you and say, "Hey, can we rap real quick?" And then all of a sudden talk about and be vulnerable and start crying and just going like, you know, and it can be about anything. It could be about the struggles that they're having at home, or a girlfriend or a boyfriend or whatever, or just a grade or why something's tough and stuff like that. But making yourself accessible, making yourself present and vulnerable for those students, I mean, it happens a lot, but it doesn't happen on a systemic level very often. And I think they've done that, really cultivating a space in which the relationships are central.
Okay.
So it's dope.
Mm-hmm. And rewind here real quick.
Sure.
I think I might have missed it if you said it. The genesis of this semester.
What is it? Semester upstream?
Yeah. Yeah, semester upstream.
How did that begin?
Yeah, so a part of it's how I grew up and where I grew up,
right,
and living in an environment highly impacted by this.
Okay.
Another piece is just that, you know, we are finding that place-based education, which is kind of becoming like a term now, and I don't know if I want to say it's the official definition of place-based education, but being in a place and letting questions emerge,
okay,
is sort of like becoming a more and more obvious way to engage students in rigorous conversation, rigorous study, okay, observation, documentation, right, creation of things. And so we've been doing several things with like outdoor education, We have a pretty like robust, I would say, beyond robust astronomy club at our school. Does a lot of work.
So super dope.
Yeah, some of it's super dope. Some of it's amazing. We're building an observatory right now out in the mountains east of San Diego.
That's dope.
I've done a lot of like water stuff with kids, out in the ocean, that kind of thing.
So the vibe of getting outdoors has already been in place. You have this background with this place and, you know, the conditions that are going on
right,
there.
Right.
So then you see an opportunity for some really deep, intense learning on
significant learning.
You're taking like, here's a beautiful thing that's highly engaging for students. They are asking to go outside. They are expressing. Astronomy club will have 100 kids show up to one classroom at lunchtime.
Yeah.
Right. They want to do this work. Mm-hmm. And then you take it and you say, okay, let's do this work. And here's a pretty horrific social injustice that's happening. Here's a public health nightmare that's happening. And it's happening because of something, because of an environmental decision that we have made. Right. Mm-hmm. So let's go take a harder look at that. And now like some students who are like, you know, people, and some students who are like, I just want to go out and look at the stars at night. They get together and they're creating something that's incredible, right?
Yeah, something new.
So you got 25 students with you. I mean, what, you just pitch this and say, who wants to come take this class? And all the kids are like, yeah, Mr. Strong's got this new class. Fuck yeah, we're going. Or how does that happen there?
That's kind of how it happened. Yeah. We had a lot of support from all the way up the ladder. Mm-hmm. This sort of Rob, again, to keep echoing his words, you know, he really believes also that like club based education might be the next thing.
Okay,
sounds a lot like after school.
There you go, and that's like a big conversation, man. It's a big conversation, part of the conversation.
Anyway, sorry to interrupt. Go ahead.
Yeah, like we vote with our feet. You know, mm-hmm. vote with our feet, mm-hmm. and they're craving it. They're craving it. They want to do it. So how do we add value to something they already want desperately to be a part of?
Okay.
And so, yeah.
Okay.
Super dope, dude. I mean, I'm telling you, like they were being able to be at Sacramento, ask those hard questions, but just the thoughtfulness of putting the project together, like that's not easy just to have the wherewithal to, so first of all, have the wherewithal to design something mm-hmm. that's going to be mm-hmm. so comprehensive and so thoughtful is dope. But then also have the flexibility to say, this is not working. Let's do this. Or mm-hmm. students will say to you, you know what, Mike, I don't think that's right. I think we should go this way. Cool. Let's go that way. You know what I mean? And that's something that so many educators do not have because they're so rigid, because they're so type A, because they're so used to teaching how they've been taught. It's awesome to see like just the ability of a teacher or an educator to just go, all right, yeah, what do you want to do? How are we going to do this? I don't know what the answer is, but we're going to learn it together. Fucking sick. Continue, Mike.
With what? He answered the question. With what? Yo, if you don't play me some motherfucking music, I'm going to throw this mixer at you.
I can't get into your computer.
We've been talking for 47 minutes straight, and it's dope.
But
no, I just want to hear some tunes, yo. Hope you're enjoying Mike Strong and episode 30 of the Educated Guest Podcast.
Hashtag very aroused.
We would like to take this moment to thank Professor Michael Wickert, street name Channel, for inviting us to talk to his teacher ed class at Southwestern College.
Very dope, very good experience. Gave him a lot to think about.
That's right. Aspiring educators, you got to do well for them babies. Our next episode, we hyped. We mad hype.
Yep, it should be pretty good. We're going to go to Boost next week. So the best of out of school time conference in Palm Springs.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to talk to some heavy hitters up there. Hopefully it'll be a good experience to bring back to y'all.
So that's the next episode. We're looking forward to that. We're going to record live from Boost. We're going to have merchandise out there for sale. We're going to go big on them this time. Let's get back into this episode, though. Episode 30.
Mikey Strong.
Peace. So let's get into one of the things that we definitely wanted to ask you about. Your coined phrase, build, bash,
I have a coined phrase?
You have people who have it on walls and shit, son. They have like spray painted it on their classrooms.
You were quoted at Deeper Learning, and I'm sure you've been quoted before that. Build, Bash Beautify. That's you. Talk about it.
Yeah. Then the first part of that, I think, is even more important. I like to remind. It's a reminder for myself, I think, more than anything. I like to say, I see you, I hear you, I'm with you, I love you. Mm. And then, like, what do you want to build, bash, and beautify together? Mm. You know, we talked a little bit about, like the educators I had in my life, the people I had in my life that were important. And that list grows and grows all the time. But I think that when I have been most joyful, or when I have felt most valuable, is when I'm doing some crazy shit with somebody who's important to me, mm-hmm. you know, yeah. whatever that is. And I think that's something that kids crave, you know, sometimes just somebody just to be like, man, they noticed, like Reardon would say, they noticed me. And sometimes when it's somebody who's saying like, man, I see this thing in you, right? I see in you this, I got this idea. Like, what about this? And those levers that you can press with people, right? Like, I found this opportunity and it's just for you if you want it. Mm-hmm. Or I did this extra work and it was just for you. Mm-hmm. I think that personalization is profound for kids. Mm-hmm. And so, every once in a while I'll write that down on something. It's weird that somebody else like knows it. I don't know. I've been saying it for a long time to myself. Yeah.
So then give us what build, bash, and beautify actually like.
Yeah.
Like what's a tactical thing for a new teacher who might be listening, like a Christian Moreno?
You know, I think behaving and seeing yourself as a founder of something is really important, like self lens.
Okay.
You are here to create, because inevitably you are going to create.
Yes.
If nothing else, you're going to create culture and you're going to create relationships of some sort. Mm. And so that build is like, man, conjuntos, like we are here together.
Okay.
in a place, and something is going to come out of this. Like, let's be mindful of that. Mm-hmm. And so with the student, it's let's make something, man. Like, let's create something that we can step back and look at. Mm. You know, there's nothing like that. There's nothing like we made this thing together. And these people are here, and we step back into the crowd and look at it with all of them.
Mm.
Like, oh man, it's just, that's it.
So that's the build piece.
That's the build piece. The bash piece, I think, you know, like I told you, I grew up listening to like NOFX and Descendants and Bad Religion and Rage Against the Machine was really important in my life. Law. I still listen to Rage Against the Machine all the time. Yeah. My friend played it on Unwritten Law for a while. You know, I think also honoring the fact that we're not satisfied, you know, like we see the injustices, we see the things, we see stuff we don't like, mm-hmm. and we're just not going to be quiet and let it be like that anymore. Mm. And so, no, I do not accept this. Mm-hmm. And when a student feels like that, no, I do not accept this. I want this to be different. Mm-hmm. It used to be very like faux pas, like very like not okay.
Yeah.
For the educator. The educator's job was to make them proper.
Right.
Like
right.
That shit is dead. Like, my job is not to make you proper. My wife, she's reading a really amazing book right now. Mm-hmm. I can't remember the name of it. Multiplication.
Super amazing though.
Yeah. It's a math book. It's a book about math. And she has this quote she showed me, and I'll kind of like paraphrase it, but it's that like we've always thought about like the basic skills. The job of like schools were to teach the basic skills that all people need.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But really throughout history, those basic skills that we have taught were just the basic skills that like middle-class white Americans exhibited.
Absolutely.
Already, naturally, because they were environments where they said like, thank you and please. And they had certain expectations and certain things were expected of them.
Yeah.
And then once you acquire those basic skills in school, then you're asked to go to these higher order skills, right? Mm. Things like deeper problem solving, collaboration, having like perseverance through some difficult stuff. Those are like after you get some basic skills.
Mm-hmm.
But what has never been honored is the fact that people who grow up less advantaged, right? A lot of times our black and brown students might be coming from environments where that's inverse, right? You might be learning problem solving at a younger age. Yep. You might have like less of these basic skills, but more of these higher order skills earlier on.
Absolutely.
And we don't tap into that, right?
Right.
And we're noticing those things, man. And I think that for a student who is like unsatisfied, for a student who sees something and they don't like it, there's a structure that like exploits or oppresses them. Like it's liberating for them to have an adult come alongside and say like, let's break it.
Let's bash that together.
Let's mess that up. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. Let's bash it. And yeah, that's where that comes from.
And the beautify piece.
Yeah. I mean, there's things that are great.
Yeah.
You know, uh-huh. there's amazing stuff happening all the time. So in the same way of breaking down, you know, divisive structures, breaking down things that tear us apart, we can look at those things that are wonderful and we can say, yes, I want more. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I want more of that. I'm going to take that. I'm going to take this and these two seemingly disparate things. We're going to put them together and we're going to make it even more. And we're going to spread love and kindness and human centeredness and grace and all these things that like make us better.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
Badass, dude. So if you're talking to a group of aspiring teachers on a Monday night, not too far off in the distant future, like next week, what is it that you're saying to these new teachers? Like, what is the one takeaway that you want new teachers to know? Because I'm going to ask you about like new teachers and then new principals and then people who at the board level or systemic level. What's the one takeaway in your expertise and in your experience that you want to give out?
Yeah. I think for the new teachers, you know, teachers who either just starting out or, you know, maybe just been going a little bit. I think one thing they need to hear from not just me, but in general is you're a professional.
Ooh.
I love it.
Ooh.
Tell me more.
You know, like, well, like, I don't know. I went to college for 7 years.
Yeah.
Right. Like I don't know many other industries where, the passion, purpose and preparedness, so go PPP on that, of a person are so like unhonored.
Yeah.
You know, like they're not trusted. They are not seen as somebody who is capable of making these decisions and crafting this role for themselves. Mm-hmm. You know, in a lot of ways, I want them to hear the same thing I tell students. I see you. I hear you. I'm with you. You know,
what do you want to do?
In the same way, I want to hear that. But I also, on top of being told, like, I know you're a professional, I think also just like, we need you to be great. You know, we can't actually be a professional.
Yeah, we can't afford for you to suck, right?
Like, yeah, we need you to be great, and I think that start out by taking the small steps and looking at the small things that are great, and I encourage new teachers all the time to like find those students who they really connect well with, and don't feel like you're being like you're playing favorites or something like that, but like press into those relationships as early as possible. When you see the thing that's working, like just push on that, man, like push on it. And I think it'll spread.
Nice. And so you do a lot of work with Stanford's D School and the school retool. So tell us a little bit, cause that's what I want. I want to know what is it that you're coaching new principals on, or principals period? Cause the school retool project is something that's cool. So maybe you can give us a little brief on that, because I imagine what you would tell a principal is similar and different than what you would tell a teacher.
Yeah. You know, I think this has been a really cool gig for me. It's been great to be in a new organization a little bit. And it's been enlightening to be in a room with 20 principals at a time.
Right.
And so I've had a few of those cohorts now. I've worked in San Diego. I've worked at D School a little bit up in the Bay Area at Stanford. Mm-hmm. I was in North Dakota last semester, fall of 2017, a few times. Mm-hmm. And then I think I'm heading to Kansas City next. I'm going to do a group in Kansas City. Starting this month, I'll be out there a little bit, and then next fall, I'll be out there several times.
Are these traditional, what I would call traditional public schools, or are these charter schools?
Predominantly, they're traditional schools. So here in San Diego, uh-huh. I've worked with the principal from El Camino, uh-huh. San Pasqual,
yeah.
Lincoln, some of the larger, like, traditional public schools in town.
And I think that that's dope because I think that traditional public schools need to find the ways to retool the time and the resources to sit down and have these conversations where we're rethinking what we do. You know, we're just stuck in our convention of how we do things. Absolutely. Staff meeting, FAC meeting, you know, PLC time, but we're not having those kind of conversations that you're having with these principals. And you're probably telling the principal, hey, have these kind of conversations with your staff. Right. I mean, I think that's awesome.
You know, and it's what they're craving themselves. Mm-hmm. I think that that's something I'm realizing a lot is that, you know, these are teachers for the most part. These people are teachers, mm-hmm. and they might have, you know, climbed up a couple of spots to an admin role. Mm-hmm. But they all want great outcomes for students in their schools. They all want it. Some are more connected to what's happening in the classroom than others are.
Yeah.
Just based on the size of school, the role, committees they're a part of, other things they're pulled, directions they're pulled in. You know, we have three, like, kind of guiding principles at the D school in general.
Dope. Let's hear them.
We have a bias to action.
Mm-hmm. Boom.
We start small.
Boom.
And we fail forward.
Boom.
Mm-hmm. And so we hit them with, like, your job is you want to try and hack your school. And so that's not implementation of a big program.
Okay.
Not yet.
Okay.
It's not cutting some huge thing or affecting your funding in some major way.
Yep.
Don't think like that. And a lot of people come in with, like, I am going to do project-based learning at my school.
I'm going to turn the whole school upside down in this way.
Right.
Nah.
I'm going to do some big old thing. And it's like, pump the brakes a little bit. Like, easy. How about you, like, have lunch with a student once a week?
Ooh.
Right. And ooh. So the goal of this, of this, the school retool fellowship for these principals is we want to really dig into what their aspiration is for students at their school. Mm. And those are all very different things, but the goal is that, you know, it's not too broad. It's a student centered aspiration and it's something that, like, you can dabble with, right? You can manipulate, something you can get into. And so that's kind of like what we do. We do some work trying to get the aspirations out. We start looking at, like, behaviors from students that might be, like, indicators of that. Mm-hmm. And then right away in the first session that I have with them, we start looking at, like, things you can try that will elicit those kinds of behaviors from students. And it's simple, awesome stuff that they do, that I think one of the beautiful things that happens is, like, it re-engages them in the craft again. You know, it's almost like they got re-signed, and, like, here they are again. And they're, like, they're having fun with it and they're spending time with students again.
Well, you're giving them a new framework, right? And then you're telling them, then you're telling them start small. Right. And then you're giving them strategies based on results or data that you're seeing at their school, behaviors that you're seeing at their school. Of course, that's going to draw them in. This is kind of shit I love, Rodrigo.
Get into
this. This is what's giving me goosebumps.
Get into it. Ask the questions. Ask away.
Mm.
So, yeah. And it avoids some things. It avoids, like, getting lost in conference talk. It avoids, like, getting lost in LCAP goals and what your test scores are and this other stuff. And it really is focused on what is the experience for the kid when they get to your school.
Mm.
What is happening for those children? Yeah.
Okay. Well,
are you feeling? Feeling good?
I'm feeling good.
This is the type of stuff that we get to have these conversations. We're lucky that we have these conversations all the time. It's nice to kind of share.
And for you, Rodrigo, another cool thing is that, like, and this is not just academic programming that we're talking about. We are talking about the school,
right?
And that's the chain link That's the parking lot. Yep. That's the after school program. Yep. That's the lunch service. Mm-hmm.
You know, everything.
The roots of this work are in design thinking. And so is a human centered approach to making some kind of change happen in your school.
I almost feel like we should segue to something else there, because I think that's a good place to stop. I don't know. I just.
Okay.
But I don't know. You tell me. Mike, what is it? Are there any, like, anything that you want to talk about because I know that you had some stuff on your mind. Is there anything that you want to share or talk about before we just kind of wrap this, put a bow on it, you know what I mean? Or engage in, because, you know, I like to push back and forth.
Well, catching me silent. That's rare air.
Well, this dude tried to say that the Scottie Pippen was top 30 players of all time. I said he had no business being on the top.
You want to talk
50.
Basketball? If you want to talk basketball, you're going to have to extend this episode, because I can roll.
I was just saying. I'm just trying to break the ice there.
Rodrigo had to hang out South by Southwest with me.
Yeah. Oh, it was pretty cool. So my man's wore a jersey. 2 days out of the 3 days we were there.
Yeah, I love
it. He wore a San Antonio Spurs Kawhi Leonard jersey.
Super fresh.
Yeah.
Appropriate for the region.
Hey, get well soon.
Get well soon.
Hey. Yeah, that's right.
Like, tomorrow would be good.
And then my man's wore, on the second day, he wore a San Diego State Kawhi Leonard jersey.
I would have only wore one Kawhi.
No.
He rolled both with Kawhi, it was amazing, because there's a couple people who went, "Are you from San Diego?" As a matter of fact, I am. Did you go to San Diego State? Nah, I went to Point Loma Nazarene, but
nah, bro.
He did. I was like, yeah.
We got a guy in EuroLeague though.
Who is your favorite basketball player?
Manu Ginobili.
For real,
no
for
hesitation.
Real? For real, for real?
For absolutely.
Dude, the Friar? Fucks with it.
Manu Ginobili, one of the most hyper-creative people in the history of the world. The Da Vinci. Dude, come on. Are you kidding me?
He looks like for Don real. Flamenco from Mike Tyson's Punch-Out.
Okay.
But he's sick. He's a sick-ass player.
He is 40 years old.
Uh-huh.
He's 40 years old. He's my hero.
Don Flamenco? What the fuck?
Because Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is mine. I'm older than you, my man.
Are you a Lakers fan?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, no.
Bleed the purple and gold. But I grew up watching Showtime basketball.
Yeah, you watched Cap.
No, I'm just glad. I'm just glad you just didn't come out with Jordan. You know what I mean? Obviously, Jordan's the greatest of all time.
Manu Ginobili is my favorite.
I love it. Okay.
I got some interesting top dudes. I like Dennis Rodman a lot too.
Oh yeah,
the court.
The one.
Yeah. No. I got a Dennis Rodman Spurs jersey in my closet right now, 1995.
Spurs jersey.
It's from
1995. No, you know. So we had this conversation, and I think it's worth repeating. I was like, dude, you live in Hopeville. Why the fuck are you such a big Spurs fan?
Yeah.
And then
I'm a big Spurs fan.
And I'm like, I don't understand this. I don't get it. And then tell them about the fucking poster, Mike.
Which poster? Oh, my David Robinson poster? So when I was a kid, so there's a couple of layers to this. I had one of those life-size, before they had the fathead sticker ones, I just had one of the life-size fold-out David Robinson, my whole wall, right?
Yeah.
That's all it took. Also, when my family broke into this country, we did it, and we moved into
San Antonio.
South Texas.
Okay.
We live south of San Antonio in a little tiny town called Premont, Texas.
Okay.
North of Corpus Christi. Mm-hmm. And so I got roots.
Nice.
I got roots in there.
Okay. I thought it was so.
But it also, it on only gets better because of my man, future president of the United States, hopefully, Greg Popovich. One of the kings of culture building in this country.
Pops is legit. I like Pop.
He is legit.
Yo, I remember one time you tweeted at me. You're like, yo, you don't forget about Pop, right? Because we were talking about sports figures that talk tough politically, and you're like, nah, Pop is number one.
Oh man, he does some amazing things. He does some amazing things. If people should read up on it, he's done some amazing things for Aboriginal people. Patty Mills, Australian basketball player on the Spurs.
Yeah.
He gives lectures on like civil rights issues to the players.
Nice.
Amazing.
Man.
All right.
What else do you want to leave us with, Michael? Because I want I want people to appreciate the genius that we have on right now.
No pressure, right?
Zero. Mm-hmm. Zero. So what you're going to say is something that NoFX would say.
So I got, well, yeah, this is going to be the explicit version.
So imagine this. There's a high school in a small town that hasn't changed the way they've done things in 30 years. And finally, somebody reaches out to you and says, what can we look at? What changes can we make right now? What do you say, Mike?
Yeah, I think you have to begin with a question. You know, what are you doing well? What's going well? Mm-hmm. Tell me about your students. Mm. I'd want to know the story. You know, I think advice is a really tricky thing. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm learning that a lot now that I'm working with like different kinds of schools all around the country, that there's absolutely no way to just say like, everybody do this.
Okay.
It's not received well. Mm-hmm. It doesn't make sense for everybody. I do think though that there are some like guiding principles that are good for everybody.
Talk to me.
And I think that our humanity is an endangered species. At least it's a threatened species right now.
Yeah.
And we just don't treat each other very well. And I think that treating each other well is more than just being nice. I think it can be critical. It can be, it just has to be productive, has to be progressive. We got to move, right? Mm-hmm. And my dad and I, when I was a kid, we used to watch Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure all the time.
So dope.
It's our favorite movie.
Yeah. And I know this.
And I know it's a silly movie, right? It's a silly movie.
It is.
But it has a catchphrase in it that is the most important slogan in my life. Before I came in here, I was putting my kids to bed on the other side of the house. And I say it to them every single night before they go to bed. Mm. My dad said it to me every time I pulled out of the driveway. Mm. I have a tattoo on my back of the Wild Stallion from Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
Oh, it's pretty dope. I was like, what the fuck is that cartoon on your back? It's the Wild Stallion, dog.
Wild Stallion.
So what's the saying? What's the catchphrase?
And the saying is, be excellent to each other.
Yeah.
Mm. And it's simple. It's very simple. And like most things that are profound, it's simple. It's not easy. Yeah. And I think that that you know, our greatness lies on like a guitar string. I like music a lot, right? Like a guitar string where there's two points and you tune it to like a tension. Right. And you work hard to get it just in the right tune and intonation. And that string has this tightness to it. Mm. And then we create melodies along the string. And it takes practice to do it well. Right. It takes practice to like craft an ear and build an ear that is like critical and works well. I think it's the same thing for schools. And so we shouldn't be ignorant to how personal those tensions are, mm-hmm, of all of our users, all of our people, all of our students. And it's really the job, I think, of schools and individual educators to like find a way to play along with those students. Mm. Like to join those tensions that we have and like create something with it. And so that saying with my dad, be excellent to each other, is really about like being present and noticing what it is in somebody else that you can like elevate.
Tight.
Right. Like what can I see in you that tight. I can help take to the next level.
And with that, folks, yo, it's been real. I know that we're going to end this and I'm going to think of some question I want to ask Mike, but you covered a lot of fundamental topics, a lot of deep topics. I loved it, man. Thank you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you guys.
I'm hoping that we do this. We might need to do a round two, maybe with some other fools, and then like a live setting. It would be dope when we're all in the room.
Let's get it live with Kwaku and May.
Let's do it.
Oh,
let's knock one out.
Let's
I'm calling him out.
Right now.
Calling out Kwaku.
K Dubs. All right, my man. Thank you so much, Michael. Strong. Be excellent to each other. Tequila's done.
Have a good one, man.
Have a good one, guys. Peace. All right, peace.
Bye, man.